A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
You hear a siren in a small Irish town, and it's probably a car fire on the N25, or someone's smoke alarm went off because they burned toast again. You hear the drone of an air tanker over a Jerusalem hillside, and you know something big is burning. Thousands of dunams, maybe, and they're calling in planes from Cyprus. Same profession, same gear, completely different job. Daniel's been thinking about this one. He's lived in both Israel and Ireland, and he noticed something that doesn't add up at first glance. In Israel, domestic fires feel rare. He's under the impression they just don't happen much, maybe because of how things are built. But forest fires? Those are practically seasonal. Meanwhile, in Ireland, where he grew up, firefighters are deploying constantly. You see them all the time. But he can't remember a single major national-level emergency in his lifetime. So he's asking, how does the role of a professional firefighter differ by country? What are the commonalities? Is the average station overworked by call volume? Or is a big chunk of the time actually training and preparation? And how physically taxing is this job today? So we went looking. And the data tells a story about climate, construction, and national character that isn't what I expected.
The thing that grabs me about Daniel's question is that it exposes a tension most people never think about. Firefighting is this universal profession. Every country has firefighters. They wear the same turnout gear, they use the same basic equipment, the mission is the same, run toward the danger. But what you're running toward is radically different depending on where you're standing. And that difference shapes everything. How you train, what your body goes through, what kills you early, and whether you spend most of your shift bored or exhausted. So let's start with the two countries Daniel asked about, Israel and Ireland, and why they're such useful contrasts. Israel is hot, dry, dense urban construction with a national-scale wildfire threat that's getting worse as the climate shifts. Ireland is cool, damp, with a dispersed population and an older building stock. You'd think the Israeli firefighter is the one getting hammered with calls, and the Irish firefighter is, well, not.
And it's not that simple.
It's not that simple at all. Because the question underneath Daniel's question is, what does overworked even mean? If you're running 6 calls a shift, but they're all false alarms and lift rescues, is that worse than sitting around for 3 days and then fighting a wildfire for 20 straight hours? And what about the third category, the training hours, the equipment checks, the physical conditioning that fills the gaps between calls? Is that downtime, or is that the actual job?
To understand the job, you have to understand what burns. And what burns in Israel is very different from what burns in Ireland.
Right. So let's start with Israel. Daniel's instinct is correct. Domestic fires are relatively rare there, and the reason is mostly construction. Israel builds with concrete and steel. The housing stock is modern, especially in the cities. Since 2014, new high-rises are required to have mandatory sprinkler systems. Most cooking is done with gas rather than open flames. Fewer grease fires, fewer kitchen accidents. The wiring is newer, the building codes are stricter. You don't get the kind of electrical fire you get in a house built in 1960 with original wiring and a fuse box that predates the moon landing.
Which Ireland has plenty of.
Which Ireland has plenty of. But hold that thought. The flip side in Israel is that when a domestic fire does start in a dense residential tower, it's catastrophic. You've got hundreds of people in a vertical structure, limited access, and a fire that can spread through ventilation shafts and electrical conduits. The 2023 Haifa high-rise fire, that was a residential tower, and the evacuation was complicated. And the 2021 Moron stampede, which wasn't a fire exactly, but involved crowd crush during a mass gathering on Mount Moron, exposed serious gaps in how Israeli emergency services handle large-scale civilian incidents in confined spaces.
So the domestic fire risk is low probability, high consequence. But the real threat, the thing that shapes the entire Israeli fire service, is wildfire.
Israel has a Mediterranean climate. Long, dry summers. 6-7 months with essentially no rain. The vegetation, pine forests, maquis shrubland is basically kindling by August, and the fire season is getting longer. The 2016 Haifa wildfire burned 77,000 dunams. That's about 19,000 acres. 60,000 people evacuated. It took international air support to contain it. The 2021 Jerusalem Hills fire was a 20-hour battle. Air tankers from Greece and Cyprus, ground crews working through the night. These aren't small events.
77,000 dunams. I looked at a map of that burn scar, and it's a chunk of the city.
And that's the thing. These aren't remote forest fires in uninhabited wilderness. Israel is small and densely populated. The wildland-urban interface, the zone where homes meet flammable vegetation, is everywhere. A fire that starts in a pine grove outside Jerusalem is, within hours, threatening neighborhoods. So the Israeli Fire Service is structured around rapid aerial response. They operate a fleet of air tractor AT-AA2s, single-engine air tankers that can scoop water from the Mediterranean or the Sea of Galilee and drop it on a fire line within minutes. They also have contracts with international operators. The Greek and Cypriot planes that came in 2021 weren't a favor. They were part of standing agreements.
And that's expensive.
Enormously expensive. Aerial firefighting costs thousands of dollars per flight hour per aircraft. But Israel has made the calculation that the alternative, losing entire neighborhoods, losing lives, is worse. So they built a centralized, nationally coordinated fire service with aerial capability. Israel Fire and Rescue Services is a national body. They can move resources across the country in hours. That structure reflects the threat. It's national, it's fast-moving, and it requires assets that no single municipality could afford.
Now flip to Ireland. Daniel said he can't remember a major national-level fire emergency in his lifetime. He's right. The last one that even comes close was the 1999 Bray Gulls fire, a wildfire on Bray Head that threatened homes but was contained without mass evacuation. And that's about it.
Ireland is cool and damp. The average annual rainfall in Dublin is about 750 millimeters. That's nearly double Jerusalem's. The vegetation is green year-round. Wildfire just isn't a major threat. What Ireland has instead is a diffuse, high-frequency risk profile. Lots of small incidents, no single catastrophic one. The Irish Fire Service responds to roughly 30,000 incidents per year. But here's the key detail. The majority of those aren't fires.
What are they?
Road traffic collisions, chemical spills, lift rescues, flood response. The Irish call them special service calls. Someone's car went into a ditch on a country road at 2 in the morning. A truck overturned on the M50 and spilled something that might be hazardous. A lift stopped between floors in a Dublin office building. These are the calls that fill the logbook. And then there are the actual fires. Chimney fires in rural homes with solid fuel heating. Electrical fires in pre-2000 wiring. The occasional thatch roof ignition.
Thatch roofs?
Still exist. Not many, but they're out there. And when they catch fire, they burn like a haystack, which is what they essentially are.
So an Irish Firefighters Week is a parade of small emergencies. None of them make the national news, but they add up.
They add up, and they're organized very differently. Ireland's fire service isn't a single national body. It's 31 separate fire services, each run by a local authority. Dublin Fire Brigade is its own thing. It handles about 10,000 calls a year by itself, and it's also the ambulance service for the city, which is unusual. But rural stations, especially retained stations, where the firefighters are part-time and carry pagers, might go days without a call. The organizational model is local, not national, because the threat is local.
Retained firefighters. Explain that.
So in Ireland, outside the major cities, most fire stations are staffed by retained firefighters. These are people who have other jobs, farmers, electricians, shopkeepers, and they carry a pager. When a call comes in, they drop whatever they're doing, drive to the station, and respond. They're paid a retainer plus a per-call rate. It's a model that works for a dispersed rural population where you can't justify a full-time station. But it has problems. The Irish Times reported in November 2023 that there's a serious shortage of retained firefighters. Recruitment is down, retention is a problem, and training hours are being cut due to budget pressures.
So you've got firefighters responding to fewer calls, but they're also training less. That's a bad combination.
It's a very bad combination. because when a call does come to a rural Irish station, it's often a long-duration, high-intensity event with limited backup. A silage fire on a farm can burn for hours. A road traffic collision on a remote road means you're doing extraction with the crew you've got. There's no second truck coming from 10 minutes away. The next station might be 40 minutes out.
So, the fire profile shapes the operational reality. But what does that mean for the firefighter on the ground, or in the station, waiting for the bell?
Let's talk about the daily reality. In an Israeli urban station, Tel Aviv, Haifa, the call volume is high, multiple calls per shift, but a lot of those are false alarms from automatic detection systems and high-rises. Someone burns toast in a Tel Aviv apartment tower. The smoke detector triggers, the building system calls the fire service automatically. The crew rolls out, checks the floor, finds nothing, goes back. That's a call. It takes time, it wears on morale, but it's not a fire.
The boy who cried wolf, but the wolf is a bagel.
Meanwhile, a rural station in the Galilee or the Negev might see very few calls in a week. But when a wildfire breaks out, those crews are deployed for 12, 16, 20 hours straight, digging fire breaks, running hose lines through rough terrain, working in smoke and heat. The intensity is compressed into fewer events, but each event is a marathon.
So which firefighter is more overworked? The one running 6 false alarms a shift, or the one sleeping at the station for 3 days and then fighting a fire for 20 hours?
They're both overworked in different ways. The urban firefighter has the grind, the constant interruption, the broken sleep, the cumulative stress of never really being off. The rural firefighter has the spike, the sudden extreme demand that tests every physical limit and then vanishes. And both of them are dealing with a job that's gotten more physically demanding, not less.
That's counterintuitive. Better gear, better trucks, better protective equipment. You'd think the physical toll would go down.
It's one of the biggest misconceptions about the profession. Modern fires burn hotter and faster than fires did 30 or 40 years ago. The reason is synthetic materials. Your sofa in 1970 was wood frame, cotton batting, wool upholstery. Your sofa today is polyurethane foam wrapped in polyester. That foam is essentially solidified gasoline. A room in a modern home reaches flashover, the point where everything in the room ignites simultaneously in 3 to 4 minutes. In the 1970s, it was 15 to 20 minutes. So the firefighter today has less time to get in, less time to search, less time to get out. And the smoke is more toxic. Hydrogen cyanide, carbon monoxide, a cocktail of combustion byproducts from plastics and synthetics.
3 to 4 minutes. You're not even out of bed in 3 minutes.
And crews are smaller. Budget cuts, staffing shortages. A truck that used to roll with 5 or 6 firefighters now rolls with 3 or 4. Each person is doing more work. The physical demands haven't decreased, they've shifted. Less time carrying heavy hose up endless stairwells. More time in extreme heat, more repetitive strain from operating heavier equipment in tighter spaces.
And then there's the long-term toll. I've read about cancer rates.
This is the part that doesn't get enough attention. Firefighters have significantly higher rates of several cancers: testicular, prostate, lung, colorectal. The reason is the turnout gear itself. For decades, turnout gear was treated with PFAS, PER, and polyfluoroalkyl substances for water and oil resistance. PFAS are carcinogenic. They absorb through the skin. And every time a firefighter puts on that gear, they're getting a dose. Then you add the combustion byproducts from modern fires. Benzene, formaldehyde, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons. And you've got a cumulative exposure problem that builds over a career.
PFAS, in the gear that's supposed to protect you.
There's ongoing litigation in the US and the EU over this. Replacement programs are starting. PFAS-free turnout gear is becoming available, but it's slow. And the gear that's already in service isn't being pulled overnight. So you've got firefighters who are more likely to get cancer than the general population, and they're getting it from the very equipment designed to keep them safe.
That's grim.
And it's not just cancer. Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of line-of-duty death among firefighters. The combination of extreme physical exertion, heat stress, and the psychological stress of the job, your heart is under assault. Musculoskeletal injuries are common, and then there's the mental health dimension.
PTSD.
Both Israeli and Irish firefighters report high rates of PTSD and operational stress. But the flavor is different. Israeli firefighters deal with terrorism-related incidents, rocket strikes, building collapses, mass casualty events. The psychological weight of responding to a scene where the damage was intentional, where the goal was to kill civilians, is different from responding to an accident. Irish firefighters deal with the cumulative trauma of road traffic fatalities. Ireland's roads, especially the rural ones, are dangerous. Firefighters are often the first on scene at collisions involving children, families, people they know. In a small town, the person you're cutting out of a car might be your neighbor.
You know the person.
You know the person, and you carry that.
So the job is more physically punishing than it looks. The gear is poisoning you, and the mental toll accumulates whether you're running 6 calls a day or 1 call a week. What about the training side? Daniel asked whether stations spend significant time on preparation.
Training is supposed to be the core of the job. Modern firefighting is technical. You need to understand hazardous materials, structural engineering, incident command systems. You need to know how a building is going to behave when it's on fire, where the collapse points are, how ventilation affects fire spread. You need to be able to operate breathing apparatus, thermal imaging cameras, hydraulic extraction tools. This isn't a job where you just point a hose at flames anymore.
But budget constraints.
Budget constraints. In Ireland, the Irish Times reported that training hours are being cut. Retained firefighters who already have limited training time because they're part-time are getting even less. In Israel, the operational tempo, the sheer volume of wildfire deployments during fire season, squeezes training time. You can't train when you're fighting a 20-hour fire. And when the fire is out, you need to rest, maintain equipment, and prepare for the next one. Training gets pushed to the off-season, and the off-season is getting shorter.
The job is changing faster than the training infrastructure can keep up.
That's the through line. Climate change is lengthening fire seasons and increasing intensity. Construction is getting denser. More high-rises, more people per square kilometer. The materials in our homes are more flammable and more toxic when they burn. The gear that protects firefighters is itself a health risk, and the crews are smaller. The firefighter of 2026 is expected to do more, know more, and survive more, with less support and less preparation than the firefighter of 1996.
The commonalities across countries?
The commonality is that the job selects for a particular kind of person, someone who can handle long stretches of boredom punctuated by moments of absolute chaos, someone who can do physically brutal work while wearing 30 kilograms of gear in a burning building, someone who can see things that would break most people and come back to work the next shift. The specifics vary, wildfire versus road crash, high-rise versus thatch roof, but the psychological profile is remarkably consistent. And that's the part of the job that doesn't change, no matter what country you're in.
That waiting? That's something Hilbert knows about firsthand.
Silage Fire, County Wexford, summer of 98. I was 19 and I thought I wanted to be a hero. 6 hours. It smelled like burning cabbage and regret. You can't put a silage fire out, not really. You just stand there with a hose and keep it from spreading while it smolders for days. The farmer was more annoyed about the lost silage than the fire. I was retained, carried a pager, worked at a hardware shop during the day. The station had one engine, a crew of 12 on the roster, and the biggest enemy we had wasn't fire. It was the smoke detector at O'Leary's Bakery on Main Street. Went off every Tuesday at 4 in the morning when they started the ovens. Every Tuesday, for 2 years.
Did you ever actually go?
Every time. That's the rule. You don't get to decide. It's a false alarm from your bed. You go.
The fitness standards back then. I've read about this. Were they as loose as people say?
You had to carry a hose up a ladder without dropping it. That was about it. No VO2 max test. No annual physical. Nobody talked about cancer. The gear smelled like diesel and old sweat, and we didn't think twice about it. Now, my nephew is a firefighter in Waterford. He has to pass a fitness test every year. Treadmill, heart rate monitor, the whole thing. They screen for cancer. The gear is different, or it's supposed to be. They're still phasing out the old stuff. The station I was at had a ghost. Firefighter died in the 70s. Roof collapsed during a warehouse fire. They kept his locker, never emptied it. Helmet, boots, a photograph of his family taped to the inside of the door. We'd tell the new recruits that if the locker door opened by itself, it meant a big call was coming. It never opened, but we checked it every shift.
That's not a ghost story. That's a memory the station is keeping alive on purpose.
It's institutional memory. The locker is there, so the new recruits ask about it. So someone tells them the story. So they understand that the jock can kill you, and that the people who did it before you paid a price. That's not superstition, that's culture.
We checked it because we wanted to know someone was still watching. Anyway, the silage fire. I quit at the end of that summer. Went back to the hardware shop full time. But I still have the pager. It's in a box somewhere.
The job is changing, and it's going to keep changing. Climate change means Ireland might start seeing more large-scale wildfires. The conditions are shifting, the dry spells are getting longer, and as Israeli cities grow denser, domestic fire risk might increase despite the construction codes, because more people in tighter spaces means more things that can go wrong.
The fire service of 2040 is going to look very different. More aerial assets, more data-driven dispatch, predictive models that tell you where a fire is likely to start before it starts, more emphasis on cancer prevention and mental health. The PFAS gear will be gone, replaced by something safer. The training will be more technical, more simulation-based. But the core of the job, running toward danger when everyone else runs away, that doesn't change.
The cutting room floor detail I can't stop thinking about. The air tractor AT-AT-02s that Israel uses for aerial firefighting. Those are the same airframes used for crop dusting in the American Midwest. Same plane, same engine. In Kansas, it's spraying soybeans. In Israel, it's dropping water on a fire line with 100 homes on the other side.
That's a good detail.
That's the weird prompt for today. If you've got a question about another profession that looks the same everywhere but isn't, send it in. We'll dig.
Thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumentop for keeping this show on the rails. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.